Brainstorm Brewery is sponsored by mtgprice.com. Track your whole collection and its value for free at mtgprice.com.
Talking about podcast.
Talking about podcast.
Da, 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 da.
Podcast.
Welcome everyone to another magical episode.
But not Brainstorm special? Brewery. Magical but not special?
No, it's not. It's a magical day today, or it's a holiday today.
Oh, I see. What day is the day that we're recording?
We are recording on
the
Monday.
The anniversary of Columbine, which I don't know why you're celebrating, dude. That's messed up.
Oh, no. I didn't even know
well,
that. That's wrong. This is April.
Looks bad.
Yeah, I know. This is.
I'm just kidding, guys. Everyone knows it's really Hitler's birthday.
I don't know if any or all of that is true.
It is, but that's not good. It's all this negative, but this day is a happy day. It's a magical day for everyone out there. And it may become a national holiday, but it's certainly a holiday out here in California, Colorado, and Washington, and Michigan. Georgia, I think Georgia's on that list, and you know we're going to have Alaska soon. So
if Georgia like legalizes weed before they legalize teaching evolution in schools, that's going to be really awesome.
Awesome is interpreted.
I mean, Texas is like looking to move that way too, right?
That I think so too. Yeah, they were talking about it. The revenue
that's
is there.
That's the crazy one to me.
Yeah, if Texas crows the line, then you might as well just the whole country's overboard. Yeah.
Like George W.'s home is there, right? Like it's all over from there, right? Where's your other stronghold?
Oklahoma.
Yes, Oklahoma, Iowa, Nebraska.
We can just pretend you don't exist and still be okay.
Oh.
As a podcast or like just in general?
Yes. I'm sorry.
This episode started really harsh. And I think it's
mostly my fault.
This whole
night started harsh.
Yeah, it definitely is all your fault. I concur on that one.
Is there a role for tonight or something?
I know my role. It's fine.
I mean, you're normally a douchebag, but you're just being a plain dick. This is unnecessary, Jason.
I think it's unnecessary to make that distinction.
How would you distinguish yourself?
I'm the personality on this podcast, so.
Oh, please don't ask Jason to distinguish himself.
The personality. Yeah. I guess so. So this guy right here, the personality of the podcast, Jason Ewald, where can they find you, Jason?
I'm a writer for mtgprice.com and gatheringmagic.com. I'm Jason Ewald on Twitter. And I don't know. I do stuff for brainstormbrewery.com. I manage the Brainstorm Brewery Facebook page, which I wish more people would like. And we do a lot of important announcements on there and talk about the articles on our website. So definitely check that out. Give it a like. It's worth it. And other than that, I don't know. I don't have any hobbies.
You're a walking commercial.
Yeah. I build the brand that is Jason E. Ault, comedian, writer, podcaster.
What's your other podcast? Is this your only home?
Really? All right, I'm on Money Draft, too. I'm the main host of the Money Draft podcast, which you can find on MTGcast and, I don't know, maybe brainstormbrewery.com someday. You never know, man.
Some people have no idea. Yeah, some people have no idea who you are. You got to give the full intro.
Yeah, well, Jason always complains the last couple of times that he didn't get introduced properly, so I'm allowing him to see why.
I didn't introduce at all. You introduce those two, they start fighting, and then, like, 10 minutes later, we start talking about magic cards. And you left out the most important guy. Like, I don't think that's cool.
We've never argued on this podcast in our lives.
Well, I just wanted everyone to know why we don't introduce you, because you're dry and boring. But when you really start talking about other random stuff, then it becomes a better podcast. So,
jeez, dry and boring. She just gave him the 1-2 punch.
So this guy right here, Mr. Cesar Chavez, or should we say Pacquiao versus Mayweather.
What are you talking about?
I hope you're not talking about me, because I'm none of
you're
those
really
things.
Celebrating the holiday shit. Really hard, aren't you?
I'm just saying, he said 1-2 punch. I'm talking about the 1-2 punch. We got Ryan Bouchard here, better known as Shamble Shark.
Or Ryan Bouchard or Cripple Command. Actually, very few people like know me as Shamble Shark.
That's true. That's been quite a while, huh?
Yeah,
I mean, Shamble Shark is my picture
at this point.
Yeah, Shamble Shark's my picture on Twitter still, I think. But outside of that, yeah, no, Cripple Command's what everyone knows me as. But thanks for introducing another person. MTG Ryan as well, while we're throwing out personalities that haven't existed for a while.
I don't exist, yeah.
Oh, Phyrexian Can't Walker.
Phyrexian Can't Walker. Yeah, there's a good number of them. That was a pretty good one. I mean, I still am personal to the, like, walk like a fish, because that kid was pretty legendary. But...
And speaking of fish, we got our resident merfolk guy. Wow. People that everyone loved to hate.
Can we just talk about what a brilliant segue that was?
That was pretty good.
I hope
speaking
so.
Of fish, wow. 10 out of 10.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you, Jason. I try hard. I just was on MTG Potpourri, so I got to hang out with Tom. And, man, just the segues are the best. Abrupt and rough.
Anyways, I'm Corbin. Hello. I like to play merfolk. That was the intro there.
That's all you got for yourself?
I'm Corbin. I write for MTG Price. I write for impeople.com. I'm chostler88 on Twitter. I'm freelance esports writer and member of the coverage team for Wizards of the Coast. I don't know. I do a lot of stuff.
You were the most boring. That's not what I was going for either. Like, just nothing.
I know this is bad radio right
that
here.
That was the boring stuff. Like, I didn't even say that stuff. I don't know. I write for some websites, a website, Gathering Magic. I'm on this podcast and the story, I guess.
All right. Let's move on. Let's move on, because this is bad TV. I thought we were going to go somewhere and it just went nowhere.
Why did you think that?
Yeah, why would you ever?
Why would you think that?
I don't know.
Hey, maybe if I spring this on these guys, something magical will happen organically.
Pshing, we got it there. So let's move into, speaking of springing on people, let's move into Finance 101.
Sure. I'm not sure how that segue works, but sure.
Exactly. That's exactly how it's supposed to work.
No, as opposed to us making up Finance 101 5 minutes before we cast, we actually have a user-submitted Finance 101 this week.
We've never done that. We're a professional podcast. Don't listen to Corbin.
Oh.
So this one is about accessory finance, talking about playmats, what sleeves, deck boxes, the little random pins that you get.
And this is a great topic. And the thing is, you can't go wrong, because everything that says Magic the Gathering on it is worth money. I used to sell revised deck boxes on eBay. People would buy empty revised deck boxes. Like, truly, you can sell anything that says Magic the Gathering on it. It's awesome. So how do you know what to buy and when to buy it?
I'm actually not a huge expert in this field. You know, outside of playmats from GPs being worth money and then holding that value decently well, I suppose, this is not something I actually have a ton of experience in.
Yeah, I mean, most of my knowledge comes from just the stuff that's come in. I've never really gone seeking it. The one thing that really sticks out to me, I'm sure you remember this, Jason, was that playmat we picked up. That's not even actually Magic paraphernalia, but it kind of falls into that same category. And, I mean, those are the kind of things you just take a chance on because you think, well, this is probably worth some amount of money, right? But I've never really gone seeking it, looking for active prices, I guess is my issue.
Ryan's referring to is a large two-player Battlegrounds playmat. It's actually Yu-Gi-Oh! Players that are mostly buying those. Magic players don't really buy the two-player mats as much as Yu-Gi-Oh! Players do, but I mean, they're still really popular. Anything old, frankly. And yeah, it's kind of hard to find some old stuff that's mispriced, but it's something that you might want to familiarize yourself with. eBay searches are a good way to see kind of what the relative price of that stuff is. So if you see something in a shop and it looks close to like what its original retail was, just pop on eBay and see if that's selling for a lot. Because there are some non-Magic branded accessories that, you know, are pretty specific to Magic that are worth a lot of money. And those old Spellgrounds playmats are a good example of that. Other stuff is like, you know, the old Ultra Pro counters that had like the picture of Balduvian Horde or Black Lotus Veil, I think, or like Grievan Ilvec. Like, old stuff like that is worth way more than, you know, the original MSRP. So really, anytime they come up with an accessory, if you can buy it for near MSRP, just buy it and hold onto it, because that stuff's never going to go down in value. And obviously the stuff that was older when there were fewer people playing the game is going to be more valuable because they didn't produce as much. But honestly, accessories are great. And I think just looking online and anytime you see something in a store is a good way to go, because that way you'll get a pretty good sense of if it's way underpriced at retail. But really, I've never gone wrong buying anything that says Magic the Gathering on it for retail. You know, I've never been disappointed in a few years. Even like you can get deck boxes for free, you know, that have like Magic art on them, and those are surprisingly valuable. It's you know, all kind of stuff. Like the deck boxes from the fat packs are worth money, especially the really rare ones. So.
Well, and fat pack boxes themselves are actually worth a few dollars, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And some of them, I mean, you have the cold stamp one, and because it's silver, unlike all the other ones, that one's like $20+. And same thing, roll downs that came in those fat pack boxes back in the day, those are worth money. I mean, there's all sorts of things. Like every little piece is worth individual money. And if you have these things sealed, that's why sealed products are worth so much, because you're getting all of these crazy little cool things on top of, you know, it actually being sealed and new.
So here's what I will do. At the pre-release, I will try to get one of every spin down. Like, everybody gets one, and not everybody's super interested after they're done using it for the tournament. So I can usually get those for like a buck, and like sitting on those for 5 years is never terrible. Like, a lot of older spin downs are worth money already. Anything like that is hard to get, like, you have to do well at a tournament to get this. I try to buy stuff like that. And I'm sitting on a lot of stuff, but like every once in a while, like 2, 3, 4 years later, that stuff, you know, goes up. GP playmats is another one. If they have two tiers of playmats, like only the judges get this one or only top eight or something like that, you know, they do like game day playmats, stuff like that. Anything that's rare that they don't give out by the thousands is usually a pretty good bet. So really, it's kind of hard to go wrong, but just don't assume that everything is going to be worth money and be a good short-term investment. But there's definitely a lot of ways to make money off of Magic accessories just by selling them. Man, I don't know. We get so much of the crap when we buy collections. You know, you buy a collection, the guy's like, here's the cards, and then here's like the boxes that it came in, and here's all this old crap, and I bought this life counter and all this. So we just kind of get it. So honestly, just buy collections.
Well, I mean, like, I think also practical advice is when you talk about stuff that you don't care about, like those dice. I mean, I won't lie. When I get dice at pre-release, I basically don't care about them and give them away at the end of the night. You know, sure, I guess I could keep them all in a small box and put them in the closet and make some money that way. And that's probably what I should be doing. But I think a lot of people probably are in the same boat I am where they don't do that. So I think that, and, you know, that may be something that's really easy to take away for a lot of people is hold on to that stuff. And especially dice, you know, like that's really easy to pick up those dice from people who don't care about them on the night of a pre-release and keep them for a couple of years.
Here's one other one people don't think about too. I'm not sure if we mentioned it. Empty booster boxes. If you go on eBay and you look up some of the old empty booster boxes, people collect these in a lot of new and opening stores. They think it's cool to put that kind of stuff on their wall. I mean, it's becoming decoration just to have an empty booster box of an old set. That's crazy to me, but it's worth money.
Puts the deck back in decoration.
Good one.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's crazy, but I just sent six of them off to be eBayed along with like a Scry life counter, or not Scry, were they Scry life counters? Whatever the metal ones were there.
That was Scry or Inquest.
It was Scry.
I know the pewter ones, yeah.
Yeah, so I had a little goblin. I thought it was really beat up, and I looked at it today. It was in like brand new shape, so that was a cool find. But yeah,
honestly,
like, just
even
stuff
the
like
beat
that.
Up ones are not bad.
Yeah, they're not bad. You can get those like for like 20, 30 bucks, but this one's like 60 because it's in nice shape. And I haven't seen a nice one come through in a long time. And that's the thing is, like, if people like us who are buying cards all the time don't see these very often, there's a reason, like, they're worth money. Like, when you find them, if you find something, you're like, this is cool, it's probably worth something. So just look it up. If you can't find it on eBay, ask somebody. That's the kind of stuff. If somebody, like, takes a picture of that and puts it on Twitter, I'm so much happier answering those kinds of questions than I am, hey, what's this card that I can go look up on eBay worth?
Yeah.
So I don't know. This is the kind of stuff that excites me too. I love finding random paraphernalia. One of my favorite things I found recently, I found a laptop bag and it has like the actual Magic the Gathering logo embroidered on the outside. It was definitely officially made at some point. I never knew they made laptop bags. I assume it makes sense somewhere along the road, you know, either a Pro Tour bag or something. But I thought it was really cool. I'm keeping that for myself. I have no clue what it's worth. But I mean, there's just a lot of cool Magic the Gathering stuff. And the game's so old now, everything's collectible.
Rubik's Cubes, those poker decks.
Yeah, those poker decks are worth a ton. Sealed, those are over 100.
Which seems nuts, but like at the same time, man, people like Magic the Gathering.
I still carry around. I've had an open one for about 5 or 6 years now, and I still have it in the front of my backpack at all times, at events and everything. So, I mean, people play with them. They're cool. It becomes such a lifestyle, like Magic the Gathering does, that the paraphernalia becomes like your way of showing off. Like, this is me taking Magic into other realms of my life. So if you're sitting there playing poker, it's cool to have Magic the Gathering back poker cards, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, let's move on then and talk about some actual Magic, also known as Grand Prix Brainstorm, or to some people, I suppose, Grand Prix Kyoto last weekend. One of the rare legacy Grand Prix, and 32 Brainstorms were in the top 8.
That means more. That has more to do with it being in Japan than anything else, probably, don't you guys think?
Does it? Because I think it's probably pretty similar anywhere you go.
It's definitely a relevant factor. Well, I mean, the Asian metagame is always like much more interested in blue than anything else. That's been a thing pretty popular since they showed up on the Pro Tour in force. And
yeah, but that's
I don't know.
That's not really relevant, right? Like, sure, Japan, but that's also legacy in general, is it not? I mean,
not even just Japan.
That's what I'm saying.
World, like.
Okay, well, sure, but I don't think it's centralized to the East. I think it's everywhere. It's people want to play blue. I mean, legacy is the Brainstorm format. It's not like Japan's the only place that's all about Brainstorms. I mean,
yeah, but Japan's where you're going to find 32 in the top 8. And
yeah, I think so.
Like, nothing has changed other than the venue since the last Legacy GP. So it's not like, oh, Legacy's ruined. It's just, look who was at the event, man.
Well, that's my question. I mean, do you think that...
Yes.
I mean, do we think that 32 Brainstorms in the United States would be Legacy is ruined either? Or is that just...
If there was multiple events.
I think you're reading way too deep into this in the first place. This is one metagame. Legacy every weekend is a new metagame. Okay, it lined up so that there was, it's not the first time that's happened. I'm sure of it. Like, that has to have happened before. Maybe not at a GP level, but I guarantee there are events where like a top 8. That does not mean it's ruined. Like, it's fine. Next week, it could be that everyone's going to come in. There are decks that beat Brainstorm decks in Legacy. That's why Legacy is so great. There's no way just to say, I broke Legacy, and this is the best thing.
Right. So my question to you guys is not... Yeah, my question to you guys is not, is Legacy broken on a fundamental level? Because I think we can mostly agree that it's not. It's that Legacy is obviously dominated by Brainstorm, this event aside. So let's talk about it in a financial sense and what that means financially. It feels like when we talk about cards that are moving or this card's up this percentage in the last week, these cards always seem to be modern and not legacy anymore. And it feels like that's something that's a trend that's kind of gone on over the last few years. You know, I mean, so just what are your guys' thoughts on that? Where, you know, is legacy financially relevant anymore outside of invest in dual lands?
It's going to slowly become less relevant.
I think a new deck can crop up. It's not going to be every 6 months or even every year, but like I think new decks are possible, and that happens with printings. Sometimes you get something like an EDH deck, you know, that gives us a new legacy card, or you get like a new keyword ability from a new block. But I think new decks are possible, and when new decks are possible, underplayed cards suddenly become more valuable, or like hosers. Like, maybe something is going to come that, like, all of a sudden, Null Rod's going to be, like, a $20 card. So Legacy does have relevance to the extent that anytime there's an event, like, a printing of something or, like, a new set or something, there's a possibility for new decks, metagame shifts. Prices are going to change based on playability. You look at Terravor. Terravor's not an expensive card anymore. You know, metagame shifts affect the prices, too. So Legacy is a dynamic format, and... You know, any format that changes, even though it's got a large card pool, has the possibility to have card prices shift after an event, and I think that Legacy is no different. It might shift less often than Modern, but I think there's relevance beyond invest in duels. So it's worth paying attention to what's happening in Legacy.
Okay. I mean, yeah. So, back to Marcel's point, it does feel to me like we see fewer changes financially now than, say, we did 3 or 4 years ago. Where do we think it goes in another 3 or 4 years? Because, and I don't know that we want to open up this can of worms necessarily, but, and then to get into discussion of whether Legacy's dead or dying or anything like that, but it is just a fact that it will be easier for people to play Modern than Legacy for the foreseeable future.
So, I mean, I think the answer to that is also the reason that Legacy right now, we're not seeing as many of those price shifts. And the big reason being, in Modern, there's so much more play of it going on in the, you know, like obviously it has kind of overtaken Legacy in some capacity. There's certainly more people playing Modern than Legacy at this point, I have to believe.
Yeah.
So that being said, now that Modern's more, you know, more adaptable, you can find it at your local stores. It's not like you have to have a specialized group to go play Modern. You know, it's a little more accessible. Whenever a card spikes from, you know, that showing up at a Pro Tour or showing up at an event, there's a lot of sustainability behind that, and that's why people are more willing to dive into those cards as opposed to Legacy. Something can do great at a Grand Prix, and it might not be relevant again for 3 more months. And so that's kind of an issue, I think, and that's why you're not seeing as much speculation in that format, and that's actually overall, I think, healthy for the longevity of the format itself, because you're not driving these random card prices up a lot, and when they do go up, it usually has good cause, and it's more over time. But I think that, you know, that's just going to continue down the road. I think that Legacy is kind of going the route of Vintage. We all, you know, we all knew it was going to eventually. But the difference is, Vintage is always going to have that very limited population because of the power, whereas opposed to Legacy is just going to become a limited population due to duels. And right. So it will become a smaller portion of the overall Magic player base, but I do not believe the Legacy player base itself will dwindle, if that makes sense.
Because those people aren't keen to sell out all that often.
And right, if they are, so someone else is buying in. But you have this point when, you know, like, obviously that's when the whole, you know, restricted list comes into play and everything else, or reserve list comes into play and everything else, because people are worried about, well, only so many people can play Legacy. The reality is it's going to be a long time before you hit that cap. I mean, there's duels all over the place if you're really good looking for them, but they're still limited enough that they can hold these prices. They're in the perfect position right now, and over time, you know, we'll keep seeing these jumps, and people will be priced out of Legacy, but there will still be enough. So I think that the prices we see now are going to be obviously higher in 3 to 4 years. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of cards drop unless they just are only playable in one or two decks and those decks fall out of favor. That's why you want to be going for the staples, hence why people gun for duels all the time, because those will always be played.
So we're seeing fewer spikes just because I think Wizards is printing fewer cards that are going to shake up Legacy. Like, Return to Ravnica was like the last block where they really printed cards with Legacy in mind. You know, you notice something like a Abrupt Decay. It was very good in Standard, but it was most relevant in Legacy. They're not really printing as many cards with Legacy in mind anymore, so that's why we're seeing fewer big shakeups. But still, anytime they, you know, every EDH set lately has had one or two cards that affect Legacy. You know, and I think it just takes one keyword ability to shake things up, because we got more Delve cards that are playable in Legacy than just Tombstalker, which is the one people were playing before. So I definitely think anything has the potential to shake it up, even if they weren't specifically designing those cards with Legacy in mind. I still think it can be shaken up. It's not going to happen as often for all the reasons that we discussed, but it's still going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense to me. I'm glad. This is what I want to talk about with you guys, because I think a lot of people were, you know, I'm obviously not going to get into the band brainstorm bandwagon or anything like that, but a lot of people just, with this GP and it having 32 brainstorms, and they're like, man, well, we were complaining about Modern, and it's the fact that there are only 4 different decks in the top 8, you know, and then you have 32 brainstorms in the top 8. So I think it was just a good time to bring it up and talk about it.
If there's 2 brainstorm decks, then that kind of sucks, but it wasn't just 2 decks. So, like, yeah, they're all running brainstorm, but at the same time, they're running brainstorm a different way. It's a staple.
No, it's the staple, really.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. I mean, it's Thoughtseize, you know, like every color has that card where you're just like, you're probably starting with 4 of that.
Yeah, there is exactly 1 Thoughtseize in the top 8. of this event, and it was in the Cyborg.
Well, all right, bad example, I guess, but you get the
general idea. I think you're right in general. That's why I was curious. I'm actually surprised by that. But I guess it's just a matter of the decks that they were not
right.
Like, but you know, your Jund or anything.
But the thing about Legacy is any given Sunday, like any deck has the ability to top eight. Like knowing your deck, knowing the format, and having a good sideboard is the most important thing. You know, that means more than making sure you have four brainstorms. And that'll always matter in Legacy because it's a format where your sideboard can shore up your bad matches.
Yeah. Speaking of, though, Jason, back to your earlier point, we did see four Monastery Mentors top eight.
Yeah. I like that card in Modern and Legacy. I've been playing more Modern lately.
Yeah, it top eighted states here in Oklahoma, Monastery Mentor Esper colored deck, like Delve, basically.
That's like, really cool.
Man, Flashing Back Lingering Souls with Monastery Mentor.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah, yeah. I had my opponents kind of do that to me. It's not great to play against.
You know what's great? People aren't just building young Pyromancer decks and jamming Monastery Mentor in there. They're actually coming up with new, unique ways to benefit. And, you know, Lingering Souls is a good example of that.
And they're playing next to Tasker, really cool. You know, Thought Scour and Snapcaster Mage. Like, the deck has so many good cards in it.
Yeah.
So you can see him playing Vintage. So that's an indicator right there.
Yep. It's
well,
too bad.
Well, the fact that it's a pseudo a Lord kind of offsets the one mana more. You know, it's a different card than Young Pyromancer, but like it can either serve the same role or it can be slightly different. That's what I like about it.
Fair. Yeah. I don't want to ruin it too much, but that card's going to be my pick of the week and not in paper.
So you completely ruined it.
Yep. What do we think about
the reasoning?
The reasoning
is actually important. It's going to spawn a whole new topic. So my pick of the week is really pretty irrelevant compared to what I want to say about it.
Okay, cool. So let's move on to the next topic. So is this set and done? You guys are done with Legacy?
So. Yeah, for sure.
All right.
We're not done with Legacy. Legacy lives on. Like, it's still my favorite format.
Nah, until they start, dual lands are just getting more and more expensive, and that's just going to get more and more people harder to get into the format. Why? Why do you hate life?
Why?
Because it's a combo deck where every seven cards in your deck can win the game.
Yeah. And it's becoming six at a rapid rate. Like, they keep printing things that say four.
Yeah, they sure do. That is correct.
It's becoming six at a rapid rate. Like, we started doing the count the other day.
It's a lot harder to gain life against that deck than it used to be.
Yeah. With them printing a Tarka's Command, that card is four damage all the time, all day in that deck. So that was number three. If you print two more, that deck becomes pretty absurd and potentially tier one. Like, the thing is, it'll always be easy to hate out, so it's probably actually never tier one, but it can compete against all of the tier one
decks. Getting harder and harder to hate out.
And you can't hate everything. That's the great part. You have to pick what is your worst matchup, and like, you have to devote a lot of sideboard space to it.
If that deck is really a problem, you're just like, okay, I'm going to run four chill. And Red's like, oh, that's not cool, man.
That's correct, yeah.
Like, it has nothing to do with the life gain. If you really want to shut down, that's why Red is like never going to officially be a tier one deck. It's like there's too many ways just to blanket shut down Red across all of the colors.
But then you only have an 11 card sideboard the rest of the day.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. But like,
it's really easy to make sure that you have a 100% matchup against like a dredge deck. But like, how much real estate do you want to devote to it?
Right, but that's because dredge isn't tier one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's move on past this because this is not a strategy podcast. This is a finance podcast.
Oh, we're diving a little deeper closer every week.
I know.
Oh, God. I don't think so.
Yeah, we just need four new people.
You guys don't even let me talk about when I actually do well at a tournament. So I don't know.
We don't care.
I don't know how we say that we're getting closer to.
We had guests on. We didn't want you to do these humble brags. Corbin, now that we have some time.
Oh, yeah, Corbin.
I'm just going to get yelled at.
No, we're not yelling at you. We're honestly proud of you.
I have never yelled at you.
I got convinced to play in States. I guess by the time you people hear this, it'll be 2 weeks ago. I got convinced to play in States by a friend who wanted to go play Blue-White Enchantments, which, to no one's surprise, did not do well. But I played Merfolk because I play Merfolk. the list is the same. The main deck is the same as I posted on brainstormbrewery.com. I think the name of that article is like a modern merfolk primer by the Fish's Biggest Fan, if anybody was interested. My list is that.
I will
that.
Put that in the show notes if I there remember. There
you go.
So.
Is this still your all-foil deck that you just got your
recall? It's obviously. Yeah, so, well, I need one more foil Oracle's recall, but yes, it's all foil.
Hey, I'll trade you. I'll trade you that for a Liliana.
Yeah, you have a foil Hercules recall.
I will get you one for a Liliana for sure.
Okay, deal. Let's do it. Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, so if you find that article, my list, the main deck is completely similar to that. The only difference was that I ran instead of two islands, I have Oberon and Amo, and instead of the Sig, I ran one Monastery Siege, which was actually insane. I was very happy I ran Monastery Siege.
Isn't that four mana?
It's three.
Okay.
So the great thing about it is you draw when you draw cards, you don't just draw you think it's a loot effect when you look at it, right? But it's actually not. You draw two on your draw step, then you discard one. So it's not draw two, discard one, but because you're already drawn for your turn, but it's look at two cards before you decide to discard.
Like you're not looting, you're sifting almost.
Yeah. So anyways, I mean, it's actually really cool. So that's, that's that. So that was the only changes. I did very well. I didn't lose until I got to the top four. Then I lost in three games to Affinity because I died on turn three twice, which was rather unlucky. It was just two Affinity God hands in a row. But anyways, it was very, very cool at the top eight, that tournament. This is the first serious Magic tournament, I think, that wasn't FNM level since the last Grand Prix Vegas. That we played in, so it was fun. Did well with Merfolk. So,
oh well, Herc's recall is 120.
Yeah, that's why I snap agreed to that deal.
Let's see if I could get that going. So what? right, you have to trade for it. So that's the only
yes.
thing.
Yes, that is the deal.
So I could probably get that for two Lilianas, and then something else. And make it happen, and then you could complete
your
merfolk.
Yeah, that deal was agreed on.
I said I could try to make it happen.
Whatever, we'll figure
it out.
Sound
like you're trying very hard, Marcel.
Yeah. Well, should I?
Later, you're like, well, I'm probably done trying now. Let's try a different deal.
Well, either way, it was going to make it to work out right. So
I just like your attempt at trying.
Honestly, it'd be worth 120 to find a Liliana in good enough condition for Marcel to accept.
Probably.
The ones I have are pretty good.
Marcel does not accept pretty good.
Yes, yeah. I do. Yes, I do. I'm not like that.
I would call them near mint. I don't know what Marcel's going to call them.
Yeah, I just got one that was near mint, and it's nice near mint. All the good stuff. There's nothing wrong with wanting to have good cards, you know? As long as people know what you want when you deal with them, and that'll be that. And yeah, you could take the riffraff elsewhere.
Yeah.
So Corbin, are you going to keep playing more states, or are you going to try to jam more merfolk and try to climb the ladder?
Well, I mean, I don't know necessarily about all that, but I am considering it. I mean, I'm getting to a point in my life where I will have more time to do events on the weekends and stuff like that. So, you know, that actually makes playing and tournaments kind of appealing. So I actually am considering doing that. You know, we'll see what happens, of course, but it's a possibility.
You're at a point in your life where most people have children, but not you. You've got a foil merfolk deck instead.
Hashtag worth.
It's just going to go up in value, I guess.
I mean, I'm trying to assess how much time I'll have in the future. My wife really wants me to break JR's rule of finance number one.
Which is
that joke.
Don't have children.
Oh.
Well, I see. Not in not so many words.
PG-13 podcast, Marcel.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. We don't need to go any further with that.
If you want to, you could check out what episode of Money Draft was that?
They're all
number
good.
Number one.
No, but that was which one was that one?
JR's rules of fine. Man, I don't even know.
You need to bookmark that one because it's part of your lexicon.
Yeah, you reference
it. If we make it to episode 100, we'll go back and find it.
Yeah. Oh, that episode 100 is going to be nuts.
Yeah, it's going to be like 6 hours long.
It won't come out till like, you know, episode 200.
You should have just called your podcast episode 100. Just got it over with right off the bat. Like, every episode you guys make is ridiculous. There's something on there that should make episode 100 at least once per show.
That's going to be a problem for you guys.
Oh, yeah. And JR was just on Heavy Meta, so there's a lot of classics there. If you guys don't know, JR, he's Jason's co-host. He will be there at the Money Draft Mansion, SVU House, Brainstorm Brewery. What's the, something that rhymes with B?
Brainstorm Brewery.
Rothel.
Bodega.
Bodega, but that's what that was the first word that came to mind, too.
Isn't a bodega a convenience store?
Yeah, sure. In New York, yes. The bodega.
Sure. Not a clue.
We're all there right. For people's convenience and to get drunk.
So
I mean, PG-13. Have a good time, kids.
Yes. So what about this high value in Dragons of Tarkir? Do you think this is going to continue to last as strong as it is? People were shitting on the set. Saying it is the most horrible
thing. Well,
because
it's full of dirtily dragons, but what they didn't realize is that people are okay playing dirtily dragons in standard. If they're like Ojutai and they say, draw a card, or if they're like Atarka and says, wipe the board, like, people are okay with dirtily dragons.
I think Ojutai's big thing is says hexproof they draw the card.
We called this set Dragon's Maze, right? And we did it kind of jokingly because we always knew the long-term value was better than Dragon's Maze, but we thought that in standard it would have the same effect. But, that has turned out not to be true because the set's been all over standard. The EV on a box is up over $130 right now, which you can be sure Dragon's Maze never got anywhere near. I think it's going to hold. I think we're at that point of peaking. But that said, the reason I thought this would be good to talk about this week is because I wanted to talk about this is not cons, even though it's you kind of think it is because it bookended the set, kind of like cons opened it, and they were both drafted with Fate. They're actually super different in terms of how much they'll be open, because cons was 3x and then 2x and a 1. This Dragons is only ever that 2x. So there will never be a 3 of Dragons, and it won't be open for all that long, because here in another month we're going to have Modern Masters, and then nobody's going to care anyways. So I think that the cards in the set are going to hold value going into Standard, 6 months from now. So I do think it's peaked right now, and I think there's some room to fall, but I don't think these are going to fall as far as like their counterparts and cons.
I 100% agree with that, and for almost exactly the reasons he listed. Like, that was Modern Masters is a huge factor. I mean, that's part of the reason we saw Voice Researchers be so expensive, and it's part of the reason we're going to see some of the Mythics and some of the Rares in here not necessarily drop. There are cards in Standard that are right now overpriced and will be dropping because, I mean, eventually you are going to get redemption as a factor in there as well. And that will do a little bit to counterbalance the Modern Masters effect. But with Origins coming out so much sooner too, you don't have that recovery from like, okay, Modern Masters is off the shelf. We're still going to, you know, draft Dragon's Maze like they were. No, now it's straight into Origins pretty much, especially if there's a bigger print run of Modern Masters, because people will Modern Masters draft for at least a month and a half before they even want to go back.
They'll do it
until
they're out of Modern Masters boxes.
Exactly. And so if there's a bigger print run and you have a month's worth of drafts, you will fire Modern Masters drafts for a month and you won't fire anything else. So this set is going to be very underdrafted. Obviously, the casual appeal is still there. And, I mean, there has been so many boxes. I mean, I talked to a lot of store owners who are just like, people are crawling out of the woodworks who they've never seen before to buy boxes of this set. And it just has appeal to every crowd. They hit it out of the ballpark. Like you said, they put enough dirtly dragons that are standard playable to make it interesting. And they things like Thunderbreak Regent, that's a home run everywhere. You can play that in a commander deck so that, you know, the rest of your dragons aren't, you know, vulnerable to things. You can play it in standard. You can play it in potentially in modern. That's one thing I wrote about this week. You can play it in casual formats as well, you know, on top of any sort of, you know, dirtily dragon deck you want. Players really don't like when you kill their things, so that kind of dragon is just always going to be worth money. And yeah, they hit a couple of them out of the park, I think, this time around. I'm really stoked about this set, way more than I was when I looked at the spoiler. I didn't see the perfect storm of things coming.
So next week, I think we should do the review of the set review. Because I remember, review of the review, because we were talking about that, and Jason was also talking about he had to hold off on his EDH picks until later, till prices started to settle, and you could start to make better picks from there. So, I mean, what do you think about it now that the values are higher than they were when we were initially looking at it? Is this now going to throw off that analysis?
It is for me, because a lot of the EDH picks are cards that wound up being better in standard than we anticipated.
Haven of the Spirit Dragon.
Yeah, that's, I never really...
That, That's a card I thought would be a dollar by now. And I think, man, that's one of those cards that's now I hope it rotation it drops low enough, because that's such obvious long-term gold that it really sucks that it happens to be good in standard too. So it's $5 or whatever instead of a buck.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Like, you guys will probably never be able to get that opportunity to buy it at a low.
Well, we just have to hope that rotation drops it. I mean, Atarka, for instance, that's another really good long-term one. The thing is, Atarka is obviously driven by standard, of course. But it will also, I think, drop once Nykthos rotates. So there's a possibility that that one will get cheap. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that I want to be a dollar and pick up long term is just not got there.
And a lot of the stuff that kind of looked like it would be standard cards, like, really isn't getting there. Like, people are playing with the EDH stuff and kind of like, yeah, we don't really like Deathmiss Raptor as much as we thought we were going to. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think the really interesting part about it, too, is so with obviously Modern Masters coming out, that's going to hurt the sales price. But with the casuals still buying, like, casuals are very unlikely, I think, to go and buy Modern Masters packs. at least not in the quantity they would Dragons. So I'm wondering if, like, if it's really true and it's way more casual appeal than normal, if that will potentially drop the prices a little bit. Otherwise, we're in some real trouble, because this is going to be an expensive set down the road. This time next year, you're going to see Dragons cards being near 20 that shouldn't be near 20.
And this might be a set where the sealed boxes really get there.
Yeah, it depends on if the store owners just start stashing them away now, or if they just fire sale them out to move the next big thing. If they stash them away, I think you're going to have a great chance of not only the singles, but also the sealed product being worth a great deal of money. If they're just, you know, if you just see all these people fire sailing them online, all of a sudden that's going to be bad, because you're going to be busting so many singles, it's just going to drop the price and the stuff that's not worth much. It's going to crush all the little prices just to keep those good cards where they need to be.
Yeah, I do think that this is going to be long-term really good. It's just all those early Dragons.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm very excited about this. I mean, I'm excited to see what they do with this core set, honestly. As much as they hit it out of the park this year, I'm very excited to see what Origins holds. If they don't have a Birds of Paradise in there, I'm going to be a little disappointed, but hopefully they can make it up with the rest of the set. I don't know why I'm most excited about that card. I'm sure I could think of a dozen other things if I really sat here, but Birds is really the thing I want to see the most right now.
Birds be so good in Standard.
It's my favorite card in Magic, and I'm not really optimistic about it being...
It'd be so good right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even in my top 8 list, apparently. Have you guys done that yet?
No.
Your Magic top 8 list on Facebook? That's the thing that's trending around. If anybody's
I did it. Why would you not? Why are you guys acting like someone asked you to like eat your own farts? Like, why would you not do something
I don't cool? use Facebook.
I mean, that's understandable, but like
Corbin's do it on Twitter, like, then, because that's on Twitter also.
But it's also, it takes a bit of time thought, and I got like a lot of stuff going on for me to sit there and think.
That's the fun part about it.
Well, yeah, I don't have the time to sit there and think about, okay, what are my top 8? That's going to be like an hour or 2 hours to really dive and get a good list out. And
really? I guess... Well, you two Scroogers can be quiet for a second. Then, Jason, what was your list?
I can real quick go find it.
I thought about doing it, but like my top 8 would just be various cards of the Merfolk deck. So, you know.
I know. I could definitely say my Momentary Blink would probably be number 1.
All right, here's mine.
Lord of Atlantis,
Drifter,
Pearl Strident.
All right, guys, here's I got mine pulled up.
Okay,
number 8. These aren't in necessarily the best order, but like number 8, Rock's War Monk. That's a card. You know, it's such a good card. I forced that in Legacy. It's banned
for 3/4 with lifelink.
I think that card would be pretty good in Modern too.
It's solid. I love everything
just
it does.
Not played at all in Modern, but it could.
Yeah,
actually,
I love its cheap. Right. I love its turn 2 playability. I love its big butt. I love the lifelink. It's just great. Vedalken Shackles is number 7. That's just such a. I just love everything about that card. You know, it makes you commit to something, but the reward is just is amazing. It's a reusable way to steal creatures. It's so good in EDH. I played it in Standard. I just love me some Shackles. 6 is a financial pick as well as a play pick. Umezawa's Jitte. The first thing I ever did financially was go to Meijer and buy all the rat's nest for like $12 that had a Jitte in there. And then I just had stacks of Jittes and I was just trading, you know, I was like, hey, Jitte for Force of Will. And people were like, yeah, I'm like Jitte for, you know, Underground Sea. And they're like, yeah, I'll do maybe a Jitte plus something else. Like just paying $12 for $25 in trade credit, essentially, plus having my, you know, 4 to play with. It was just the best. Number 5, Deadeye Navigator. I don't care if you think I'm a monster. That's one of my favorite cards in EDH. On that theme, number four is Prophet of Kruphix, same reason. Number three is Maelstrom Wanderer. That's another card where I looked at that. I'm like, is this going to do something financially? Because, you know, Plane Chase isn't going to really get bought by competitive players, so it's mostly going to be casuals. Maelstrom Wanderer is my favorite deck, and it kind of taught me that auxiliary product, even if it's not marketed to everybody, there's still money in there. And the fact that that deck also gave us, what's the other Cascade guy? The one that gets played in Legacy. Shardless Agent. Yeah. It made me realize that stuff matters just as much as stuff marketed to competitive players. Number two is Knight of the Reliquary. That card's, it's just so good. It's in terms of like the way a card plays, it's my favorite card. But in terms of cards that I like means something to me on like made me love the game is number one, Birds of Paradise. I just love how that card plays. It was like the first card I ever really realized I undervalued at first. And when I started playing with it, I'm like, this card actually is nuts. And I love the story behind it too, where Mark Poole submitted his art for Tropical Island. They're like, this doesn't look like Tropical Island. We can't use this. But they had to pay him for it because they commissioned the art. They still had to pay him. So like, well, we might as well use it. So I just thought it was so cool that they made the card out of the art, not the other way around. That was like the only card where they did that. So that made me really like Birds of Paradise a lot.
Yeah,
that's a pretty fantastic list. I like that you said number two there too, the Knight of the Reliquary. That's got a pretty good one for me too. I'm sad that didn't make my top eight list, because as soon as you said it, I was like, oh, I probably could have replaced the Swords to Plowshare with that one.
I don't know how that didn't make your list.
I know, like I couldn't think of them all, right? Like I thought of, you know, well, here, I'll read my list off. I also missed another one that my friend pointed out right away. This isn't one that most people know about me, but there's like an inside joke with this card. So my list currently, without changes, is Swords to Plowshares. That was just when I realized that there was like a new level of what removal could be. Before that point, you just like ran whatever removal was in your colors. And Swords was like the first card that really made me go, I want to play this color because it has this card in it. Isochron Scepter, actually Jason, that was one of the first ways we bonded and became friends, was over
Isochron Scepter deck with Zozu the Punisher. It was like Tigger with red in it. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it would have been real bad. We never actually put it together, luckily. But
I played it on Workstation.
And did you? Okay.
Beat some decks, remember, and they were not happy.
I just remember theory crafting it over some Sambuca. So, yep. So Thragtusk is my number six. Tolarian Academy is my number five. I've just always loved combo, and Tolarian Academy is probably the most broken combo card out there if you really look at it. Dark Ritual, Infernal Tutor, and that's mostly just for Spanish Inquisition. Death Shadow.
Why Dark Ritual?
What's that?
Why Dark Ritual?
Dark Ritual? Dark Ritual is like the first real combo card, right? It was the first card that just made you go, you can do things. I mean, there was Black Lotus and stuff like that, but within fair combo and Legacy and stuff like that, it was really the enabler for making combo work. And so Dark Ritual just always has that spot in my heart for like every combo deck I play in Legacy has Dark Ritual in it. So like Dark Ritual is just the card that's all around everywhere. I play cards that will have a different, you know, 71 cards, but there will still be four Dark Rituals in it. There's some other overlap too, but nothing is better than four Dark Rituals starting a combo deck that way. And then my number two is Death Shadow. Clearly, I mean, the thing bought me a car. And then my number one was Seance, for obvious reasons.
He has no financial bias in any of these picks here.
No, Seance is more than that to me. Like, I'm actually playing this in Modern. I'm going to grind PPTQs this season with Seance.
It's a good card, goddammit. It's a good card.
It's honestly, everyone's like, oh, it's no Birthing Pod. You know what? There's a reason Birthing Pod got banned, and it's really good anyway. And when you get to bring back things like Fulminator Mage and Thragtusk and Terastodon, it's pretty good. And Sidisi. Sidisi's insane with it. The new Sidisi.
Oh, yeah. You just sack it to itself and then Seance it.
Yeah. And, you can chain it, because I'm running on Burial Rites in the deck, too, so you chain into the first on Burial Rites, and you can resurrect it, like, three or four times. You can chain, like, Fulminator Mages together, all sorts of cool stuff. But anyway, so the one card that should have been on there is Axelrod Gunnarsson, and for no other reason other than the fact that I have to announce that card like a wrestling announcer every time I hear it. It has my favorite name of any Magic card out there, for sure. I really love that card. So yeah, that's the inside joke one. But that would probably replace Swords for me, if not.
That's Knight a very inside joke because I've never heard you mention it.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, it's a local thing, but it's absolutely like as soon as I put that up there, a couple of my friends called me out and like that you're forgetting one, and of course like I knew that's what it was when I thought about it.
It's hard to pick just eight, man. If you've been playing this game for a while.
Yeah.
That's why making the list was so much fun though, because you're just like, oh, I know I missed that, but you know your initial eight is just your kind of spontaneous. Here's what it is. You don't have to lock it in, but you're just saying these are the eight.
Is your microphone in your chair, buddy?
Can you mute when you do all these movements, please?
It's like literally the noise.
Seriously?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I like literally didn't even fucking move. Weird.
So I wrote down eight real quick.
Excellent. Join the festival. What
there
do you
we
got?
Go. This is all right off the head. Why you guys are doing this? Number one, obviously, momentary blink. Now, people that don't know the power of momentary blink.
Is that the top? Is that your top pick?
That's my number one pick. That's my favorite card.
Why would you say that first, man?
Well, because you start with the best and you work your way down.
No, that's literally the way nobody does it.
I got a number one and everything else is all I don't know where it lands at.
You're killing the suspense this way, I believe, is what Jason is saying.
I don't care. Well, there's other good cards I could talk about. It's a story. It's a journey. You get to go to the end of the movie first and then we go backwards.
All right. I like to hear it. Let's do this Interstellar.
All right, so Momentary Blink. If you don't know the power of Momentary Blink, it's one and a white to blink a creature, which is remove it from play and bring it back to play immediately, flash it back for a three and a blue. This was back in the time when damage was on the stack. And I'm sure there's a big percentage of people listening to this podcast that have no idea what damage on the stack was or, you know, how it played out. But you could just do some insane things like have your creature deal damage, blink it out of a play. If it had a come into play ability, you get the card advantage from that. Creature sticks around on board. Your opponent's creature dies, and, you know, after combat when the damage is assigned, and you get all this from this value of a card. So for the price, you get so much value. You could do it to like a Muldrifter, and it was just a nuts. Muldrifter and Momentary Blink. I just had so much fun with that, and like Shriek Maw back in Ravnica, or was it Time Spiral?
Yeah, we won a lot of games in Two-Headed Giant Limited, the Godslayer and I, with like Fire Maw Kavu and just all kind of stuff. Yeah, Momentary Blink's really good in Limited too.
Yeah. So Marcel, when you built your queue, how many seconds did it take you to start with a Momentary Blink in there?
That was one of the required cards to be in there, and that was one of the first cards I got foil, I believe.
He couldn't find a near mint foil.
And it was not good enough. That started it actually, because someone gave me one that was all scuffed up, and I was like, I can't have that.
No, my number one must be gem mint.
It must be gem. And so the next one down the list, in no particular order, Wee Dragon Knots. I had a great time with Wee Dragon Knots, building all kind of decks that abused that ability. This is kind of like a Prowess ability. So imagine nowadays.
Did you say Wee Dragon Knots?
Wee Dragon Knots. W-E-E. This is for a 1/3 flyer for one and red and a blue. And whenever you cast a spell, it gets +2/+0.
Yep.
So, yeah, me and my brother, on the back of, was it Birds of Paradise, be able to get a turn 4 kill with Wee Dragon Knots in standard. So that card was pretty cool for that. Then Reoccurring Nightmare. This is one of my favorite cards in Cube. You could just do all kinds of crazy, nutty stuff. And yeah, that's a big card for me. Damnation, just because when I was playing, this is during Time Spiral Planar Chaos. So if you watched the Wizard site when Damnation was spoiled, like you saw Wrath of God pop up on the website, then all of a sudden it turned into Damnation, and like that, just I flipped my head when I saw that. So it was like literally the coolest spoiler I've ever seen. So Damnation is definitely up on the list.
I do remember that. I totally forgot about that until you said it, but that was freaking awesome.
Yeah, I flipped my top. It was amazing. And then Stinkweed Imp. This was a card that got me back into playing Magic. I quit Magic for quite some time, and then I saw my brother playing a Dredge deck with Stinkweed Imp, and like that blew my head. I was like, graveyard as a resource in this ability. Like I just knew Magic was awesome after that, and I have been on crack ever since. And Chaos Orb. This is a really iconic card from when I was a kid. How many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then Flametongue Kavu, just because Flametongue Kavu is great with Momentary Blink. There you go. 8. Bam. Corbin, your turn.
All right.
Curse Catcher, Lord of Atlantis, Silver Gull Adept.
Oh, God.
Master of the Pearl Trident. Master of Waves. Mutavault. Thassa.
Makes you look so one-dimensional, though. Is playing Merfolk the only thing you like about Magic Total?
Knight of the Reliquary.
He can come on his own. Jeez, this guy.
This guy.
No, we're done here. Let's get to a real list. Pick of the week, boys.
Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
That was quintessential Corbin. Like,
I like Merfolk. Am I supposed
to? Yeah, and nothing else about Magic at all?
I like Knight of the Reliquary. I like to play Commander.
I like one restaurant and one deck. I'm a simple man.
Hey, we're working on him. He doesn't like Bud Light with Lime anymore. He moved on, so slowly but surely.
It's not Bud Light with Lime. It's Bud Light Lime.
Oh, damn it. You know. How?
See, one person. One
I
person.
Know it from Corbin saying it. I didn't know that from, my Bud Light Lime drinking days.
Yeah, but the ones you told me that, I erased that from my memory bank, so I don't remember that ever again. But somehow it stuck with you. It worked on you, Jason. You're falling for his doctrine.
It's funny. So you want me to start off since I already gave away my pick of the week earlier and explain exactly why that's my pick of the week?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay. So Monastery Mentor. This card is, if I'm correct, I'm not sure, Marcel, if you want to check. I'm not near the computer, but yesterday it was, I believe, 850 on Moto.
Yes, 8.
Okay. So this is a mythic, clearly. It's getting a lot of play in Modern, getting a lot of play in Standard. One thing we're not really seeing a ton of right now is people playing Modern on Moto. It's definitely happening, but it's not like the queues are firing like crazy. Like Modern's kind of like calmed down a little bit. Prices are pretty stagnant on Modern or on Moto right now. Everybody's kind of playing these Grixis Delver decks, getting into them, but they're really just holdovers from when Treasure Cruise got banned. However, with the season coming up here and then changing it over at the PPTQ level to adding Modern, I think that we're going to see a lot more of that on Moto. And I think with people switching over to doing Modern Masters, we're going to see a lot less of this product opened on Moto in the next coming months. And also the fact that they gave away Khan's product all the way up until a few weeks ago means we didn't really get the packs for that. And so now going forward, I think that card, if it turns out to be the Modern player that it looks like it's going to be, I think we're going to see a spike come Modern season on top of the Standard play it's going to be seeing as well.
I can see that happening. I mean, it's been going down and down and down and I've been like, why? This car is really good. And
I think you want to wait until when people first start like talking about Moto or talking about the Modern season. Everyone's still wrapping up the last of this PPTQ season because we have through the end of this month. But next month starts Modern PPTQs. And at that point, people are going to be wanting to test. And I think that's a deck that a lot of people are going to kind of transition into because a lot of the pieces that you need for it are either cheap or like the Monastery Mentors can also be played in Standard. And so that's going to be appealing to a lot of people considering it is definitely a tier one deck.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are also waiting for what's going to be reprinted in Modern Masters. I know I sold off a bunch of potential reprint cards that I've had, and I'm just waiting. So I'm kind of frozen in Modern. So, you know, there's definitely opportunity in this window before we get the spoilers that you can pick up some good picks. So it seems reasonable. Now,
That one's strictly online. I think in paper it's just too much right now. I think it's still 16 or 17 in paper. So I wouldn't want to be anywhere near there.
What about the 42 for the foil, since now this is like a legacy card and potentially...
No. I mean, that foil's worth money for redemption, right? Like, that's strictly why that's worth so much. It's a mythic. It's part of the redemption.
But that's the paper price. The foil price is $18, whereas the paper price is $42.
Yeah, I don't even like that foil price online. I don't like the foil price anywhere. I think the factor here is not that the card is too cheap. I think that it is too cheap online for the amount of play it is about to see come next season. I think that everything else is correct and where it needs to be, if not potentially a little high. Like, I think the paper price could actually come down a little bit. I think both should settle around 12 to 15. But on Moto, because you have such good margins, I think getting into a card at 8 feels a lot better getting out at 12 than, you know, real life. There's not a whole lot of money to make there, but you absolutely can on Moto.
Get pinched with fees on both ends.
Yep. It's a good way to kind of put some of your standard value aside on Moto, because there's a lot of cards that are a little overvalued right now with Dragons still being pretty popular. So some of your more expensive stuff, if you want to just sit on it while you're playing Modern Masters and not worry about it, sink it into cards like that. All right. Who's next?
I'll go. I guess this is another Magic Online. I mostly pick. This is going to, I'm trying to, Profaner of the Dead. This card is 2 cents online.
Did you say profaner?
Profaner, yeah. Profaner. How do you say it?
Profaner,
okay. Profaner of the Dead. It's, oh yes, 40 cents in paper. That's still kind of cheap, so you probably get it, see the potential. If it does anything, it should go up. I mean, they're talking about this in Japan as potentially some play, and the effect is very powerful. You exploit it, and when it exploits a creature, you return to the owner's hands all creatures your opponents control with toughness less than exploited creature's toughness. I mean, that is just a very, very powerful effect for. You could wipe the board, clear it out. I don't know if it's right or now, but maybe sometime in the future. But at 2 cents online, I think you could pick up a few copies of these and not be mad at yourself if it does do anything later on.
That seems really cheap. I mean, anybody who played that in Limited knows how powerful it is, but
it's absurd in Limited for sure. Oh, yeah. I like that pick.
I didn't lose a game. I think I lost like one game the whole weekend. I picked Silumgar both times trying to get cards like that. So yeah, definitely cards that are really good in Limited can usually translate over to Constructed. And you know, sometimes the game changes when, you know, post rotation we get a brand new metagame. So 2 cents for a rare?
Yeah, the new bulk rare price online is now a penny. That's insane. From 5 cents and now they're pennies from most bulk rares. And most uncommons are half of a penny. And commons are now 0.002. It's like literally you can get like a playset of all the commons and most of the uncommons except for the three expensive ones for like $3, and then you could just fill in the blanks from there.
Really cool.
Yeah, so you can get a lot of if you're a casual player, Magic Online is like as cheap as it's ever been, and yeah, that's the opportunity. There you go, Finance 101.
I mean, that's something I recommend doing in paper sometimes, buying, like, if you're a player, just pay the $25 for the playset of every common and uncommon. Because, you know, sometimes I did that for New Phyrexia, and the guy sent it out, and, like, I just snap sold the, all the
Beast
the Phyrexian. It wasn't the Beast
Within,
it was the blue thing.
For Mental one Misstep?
The Mental Missteps were worth more than the $30 I paid.
Yeah.
Huh. All right, what about you guys? What's your picks?
I'll go last. I have one. I just want to go last.
Okay. I'll jump in then. Mine is, as near as I can tell, a casual pick. The card has been moving. The card is Dungrove Elder. It was really solid and standard. I think it's just the, hey, it's forests. I play forests. Forests are good. Let's have forests sort of thing going for it. But it's moved pretty steadily from $2 at the beginning of the year to almost $3 now. There's a pretty decent amount of supply out there still, so I think it's not like a super fast mover. There is a game day promo full art, which is less than 2x the price of the regular.
That can't be correct.
Well, something's wrong there, and I think they're both due to go up. There's actually not a ton of the game day promos out there, so I like them both as a pick. I'm not sure. I mean, we're not really seeing a lot of growth in the promo. That we are seeing in the regular one. So I think they're both good. That promo definitely has, because it's a casual card, I'm not sure the promo will go crazy like it would if it were an EDH or a modern card or Legacy, obviously, anything like that. So I think both are good. I'm not necessarily leaning towards one over the other, but this is something that I think will pay off in 6 to 12 months pretty nicely. You can still get in right around $2 on these, on the very cheap ones, $2 to $2.50, and I'm pretty sure it's $5 not too long from now, and with the potential to over the next year or two just creep into that $7-$8 range, and you're looking at tripling up.
That sounds good to me, man. I play Dungrove Elder and Omnath, obviously. Like, I don't like that it doesn't trample, like it just gets chump blocked, but anything that's that big, like, and hard to kill, it's a great card. So I don't know. It's a tree folk too, right?
Yeah.
So like that's somewhat relevant. There are people that play tree folk type decks. Like, I feel pretty good about that as a pick. I think the promo will go up when the non promo goes up. Definitely.
So right.
I have a part pick, part retraction. Well, not really a retraction, just a correction. So last week I was talking about, I posited that Vesuva was growing so rapidly because of the combo with Dark Depths, but it doesn't actually combo with Dark Depths. The card I was thinking of that that combos with Dark Depths is Thespian Stage. So that's actually my pick for this week. Just because Thespian Stage is still too cheap. Like, when they were like a buck, I was like, buy them all. And then they went up to like 250, but then they went right back down. So, like, you can get them for like 50 cents plus shipping right now. I think like the cheapest free shipping I found is like maybe like $1.45. I really like Thespian Stage. I really like the foils. The foils, you're looking at, you know, like a 10x multiplier. So I think 10x multiplier is about the max, but think of how that translates. If Thespian Stage hits $3, are the foils going to be $30? I don't know. But I definitely think there's room to grow for the foil as well. Like, the cheapest the foil has ever been has been like $8. You know, and they're like, they're 10, 11 right now. So I really like Thespian Stage foil and non-foil. I have a big box full of them because, you know, I identified this right when Gatecrash came out as just a solid EDH card. I play Thespian Stage in a lot of my decks. But Vesuva also gets played in EDH, and that's why it's so expensive, because it's just, it's so good. Being able to copy any one of their lands, you know, is really solid. So I'm honestly not saying don't pick up Vesuva. If you pick them up, like, don't try to put in a deck with Dark Depths, as probably a lot of you knew. I got confused. I knew one of them worked and one of them didn't, but I didn't think about, like, I knew the one that came into play as a copy didn't work. I just thought Vesuva was the one that, for whatever reason, I got confused. It's fine. Vesuva's still a good pickup. Thespian Stage, for all the reasons I said Vesuva was a good pickup, plus the Dark Depths combo, they're both solid pickups. So, like, I don't mind running those back week to week. Just don't try to use Vesuva with Dark Depths. It won't work out the way you want.
Well, yeah, we talked about that last week, and I was – spent all this time looking at the Vesuva graph and never even thought to, like, call you out on the Dark Depths thing. I just didn't think about it either. I was busy looking at the financial trajectory of it, which, you know, it may have been for the wrong reasons, but I still think you actually had a pretty solid pick there, because the data did back up that it was moving upward. So, you know, you may have been wrong, but you were wrong in a not so bad way.
You were right for the wrong reasons. All right, I think we are coming up against an end to this podcast. Or is there anything else we want to?
Oh, remember? Man, I thought we'd make it at least 200 episodes.
you used this already.
Disappointed again.
I'm sorry. You need new material, Jason. We can't use that same ending again and again and again and again. We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com. Brainstorm Brewery is sponsored by MTGPrice.com. Track your whole collection and its value for free at MTGPrice.com.